Here on Stolen Lives, we discuss brutal and heartbreaking crimes against children. Themes may include child murder, torture, and sexual, domestic and child abuse. I do try my best to remain respectful for the babies in these stories and leave out unnecessary details that, honestly, none of us need to know to understand the frustration of why and how this ever happened. However, if you find any of these themes triggering, this podcast may not be for you. Listener discretion is advised. This week's story is a listener suggestion via Patreon. Thank you to Rachel T for your suggestion and for purchasing a book from my Amazon wishlist. It's always appreciated, and I love reading the notes you guys are leaving for me. I especially like this week's suggestion because it has a happy ending, and I never get to tell a story where the child goes home safe and well. It's 100% a testament to the authorities involved here. If you too would like to suggest a case for me to cover in the next 3 months, please go to my Patreon for more information. Links are in the show notes. October 2021, Carnarvon, Western Australia. 4-year-old Cleo Smith vanished from her family's tent in the middle of the night. The zip was too high for her to reach. For 18 days, thousands of people searched for her, while a man in a nearby town had already given her a new name. This is Cleo's story.
Go ahead, caller.
Hi, my daughter's gone missing.
How old's your daughter, love?
She's 4.
The beginning of a nightmare. This call just moments after Ellie Smith's world stopped. Her daughter, Cleo, gone, snatched as her family slept at the remote Blowholes campground.
Cleo Smith was born June 17, 2017. And at the time our story takes place, in October 2021, Cleo was 4 years old. She was a happy and healthy little girl who had just become a big sister for the first time to a sister named Isla. Cleo loved collecting rocks, dressing up like a princess, and putting on makeup. She is the ultimate girly girl. Cleo is also hilarious, even, and we will get to it, but even when she's being rescued from her abductor, she still has a massive smile on her face for the investigators on the scene. Cleo is just the sweetest girl with the biggest heart. Now, Cleo's parents were split by the time Cleo was born, leaving her mother, Ellie Smith, as a single mother. In 2018, when Cleo was still only an infant, about a year old, Ellie started dating a man named Jake Gallidon, and they would quickly get married. In everything I could find about this story, in all my research, in all the interviews during the time Cleo went missing and in the aftermath, Jake was front and centre with Ellie begging for her safe return. He saw Cleo as his daughter, not a stepdaughter. In Jake's mind, he is a father to two little girls. The family lived in Carnarvon, Western Australia, 900 kilometres, or about 560 miles north of Perth. It's a coastal community with a population of around 5,500 people. The family were a camping family. I think you're either built to be a camper or you're not. I like a warm bed and indoor plumbing. But this family would go camping often. They were very outdoorsy and active, and Cleo loved it. Friends of the family would describe Ellie and Jake as really attentive, hands-on parents who just wanted their kids to experience the world. Friday, October 19th, 2021 was during the spring school holidays, and the family had planned a little weekend camping trip. A particularly special trip because it was the first time they'd been camping since Isla was born. And that afternoon, Ellie, Jake and the two girls, 4-year-old Cleo and 7-month-old Isla, left for their adventure. Now, Ellie and Jake were also very familiar with the area. Both had grown up in Carnarvon, and they had both spent much of their own childhoods camping with their families at the nearby coastal campsite known as the Blowholes, in the town of McLeod. About an hour's drive north of the family home, the parents were excited about sharing their love of camping with Isla, even buying a new larger tent for the occasion. Ellie, Jake and the girls arrived at the campsite at around 6 p.m. It would have been still light though, because we are heading into summer, giving the adults time to set up the tent before it got too dark. The family had dinner together, and then the girls were all tucked up in their sleeping bags. Not long after, Ellie and Jake joined them and they all went to sleep. At about 2 a.m, Cleo woke up her parents asking for some water, something very normal for a child Cleo's age. Heck, I often wake in the middle of the night to use the bathroom and for a glass of water. But Ellie tended to her, and then everyone went back to sleep for a few hours. After that, everyone seemingly slept soundly till morning. It was around 6 a.m. when Isla stirred, Ellie getting up to feed the infant. She opened up the internal divider of the tent, between where she and Jake were sleeping and where the girl slept. Isla was in her cot, however Cleo was gone. Her sleeping bag was missing. The zippered opening to the tent had been left wide open. Cleo's favourite doll, a toy that she was inseparable from. This doll was left behind. Ellie woke Jake in a panic, and the two instantly started looking around the campsite. They checked cars, the toilet block, the surrounding area, but she was nowhere to be seen. Now, I've had times where I couldn't lay my eyes on my children when they were young, and seconds feel like hours. No exaggeration. So I can only imagine what was going through Ellie and Jake's head at this time. At 6:23 a.m, Ellie called 000 emergency services to report her daughter missing. We are just going to take a quick break now for a word from one of our sponsors. Fellow campers heard a panicked mother searching for her daughter, and they quickly joined in on the search for the little girl. An informal search was underway before police even arrived, and to their respect, they were there just after 7 a.m, the police joining in on the search. They set up roadblocks outside of the campground, stopping campers on their way out and taking down their information. Cars were also thoroughly searched. The campers on site were very open and willing to give police free range of their campsites and vehicles. Everyone wanted Cleo found as soon as possible.
Just there.
Yep.
We woke up this morning and she was missing.
Yep.
Volunteers, police, family and friends, as well as Carnarvon locals joined in on the search. Additionally, the ocean was scoured and a local helicopter company joined in looking for Cleo. The efforts continuing throughout the day and that night. However, there was no sign of the four-year-old. With every passing hour, the fear Ellie and Jake had inside. Obviously, you cannot help but think of the worst-case scenario, because let's be honest, you listen to this podcast. While yes, stranger abductions are rare, they do happen. And even rarer, do these stranger abductions have happy endings? The police did initially consider whether the preschooler had just wandered off. But as the search entered the second day, without any sign of her, an abduction theory began being discussed. Now this obviously was terrifying for Ellie and Jake, and this would have been further increased when the police held a press conference to announce that 20 sex offenders lived near the campsite where Cleo had been last seen. Missing persons posters with Cleo's picture and description were put up in almost every business in Carnarvon, and the entire community was searching for her at this point. Honestly, the local residents here should be commended as much as the authorities for the pressure they put on in finding Cleo. Literally, everyone was out doing what they could. By the fourth day of the search, the police had looked inside all the holiday cabins that were scattered throughout the blowhole camping area, even breaking open locks if necessary. Additionally, DNA samples were collected from campers who had been there over the weekend. As I said earlier, the investigators did all they could. They locked the campsite down, and this was a usually very busy area over the weekend. But not only for that initial weekend, but no one was able to enter, and it remained a crime scene for the entirety of the investigation. Ellie and Jake remained at the campsite, hoping against hope that their daughter would be found close by. Ellie said in a television interview, quote, "I guess the worst part is we can't do anything more. It's out of our hands. We just feel so hopeless and out of control. Everyone asks us what do we need. Really, all we need is our little girl home," unquote. Every time Ellie and Jake received a phone call, they felt a glimmer of excitement. This was the phone call where they would be told Cleo was found and she was coming home scared but otherwise okay. But unfortunately, their hopes kept getting shattered. Cleo's best friend Naya even made a heartbreaking statement, saying she missed her and hoping Cleo would be found so she could come play at her grandmother's with her. Naya even drew a picture of her friend, saying if anyone recognised her to please bring her back home. By this point, social media, web sleuths, and true crime and unsolved mystery subreddits were blowing up with theories about what happened to 4-year-old Cleo. Many of these theories were unfounded, and a lot of people were starting to blame Cleo's parents for her disappearance. Now, police were very transparent with the direction of the investigation, and they stressed that Cleo's parents were in no way suspects, that they were fully cooperative with the search for their daughter. Police would state in press conferences, however, that even though it wasn't Ellie or Jake involved with Cleo's disappearance, they believed another adult had taken her. And this was because the tent she'd been sleeping in had been unzipped to a point that someone Cleo's height wouldn't have been able to reach. Task Force Rodeo was launched by the Western Australian Police, and they were assisted by the Australian Federal Police. There were about 140 police officers, led by Superintendent Rod Wild. By the sixth day of the search for Cleo, Western Australian Premier Mark McGowan announced a $1 million reward was being offered for anyone who had any information as to where she had gone. He called the situation every parent's worst nightmare. At this point, the police were asking the public for any dash cam footage from the dirt roads near the blowholes area between 1:30 a.m. and 6 a.m. on the day Cleo disappeared. Because sometimes we have things that we aren't aware of, that possibly someone had captured something important. By this time, there had been more than 200 reported sightings of Cleo all over Australia, but none proved to be reliable. The police continued to canvass Carnarvon, going business to business, requesting any CCTV footage that they may have, and these were analysed frame by frame. The investigators cross-referenced vehicle registrations, also looking at mobile phone or cell phone data, and they were looking at examining any device that had been active near the campsite during the critical time period. Now, because of this, investigators were able to narrow their focus on one particular vehicle, a Holden Commodore, and it was seen leaving the Blowholes campsite between 3 and 3:30 a.m. on Friday, October 21st, 2021, the day Cleo vanished. November 3rd, 2021, shortly after 1 a.m, an entire 18 days since Cleo had gone missing, her mother, Ellie, received the phone call she had been waiting for. It was the police, and they told her they had someone who wanted to speak with her. It was Cleo. She had been found alive and unharmed. Cleo was found only minutes from her family home in Carnarvon, Western Australia, being rescued from the house of a man named Terence Kelly. Police held a press conference announcing the incredible, unbelievable news, and obviously the entire country was elated. The police commissioner calling the day of the discovery one of the most remarkable days in policing. The town was completely covered with pink and purple balloons. There was a banner that read, "Welcome home, Cleo." Many people had never thought that Cleo would be found alive after she'd been missing for 18 days. Ellie and Jake were immediately in the car after the phone call to be by little Cleo's side at the hospital. Ellie posting on social media the family were whole again.
I've got you, Bobby.
What's your name?
You're all right.
What's your name? What's your name, sweetheart?
My name is Cleo.
You were there when Cleo was found. How was your emotion?
Well, shock to start with. Quickly followed by elation, obviously, and I was just, it could have been any one of the team that were here. It just turned out that I was one of, four guys that were fortunate enough to go through that door and make that rescue. But we had always hoped for that outcome, but still we just were not prepared for it. So, yeah, it was absolutely fantastic. And originally it was, to see her sitting there and... in the way that she was, it was just incredible.
What did she say to you, Kev? What did she say to you?
Well, I asked her what her name was. One of the guys jumped in front of me and picked her up, and I just wanted to be absolutely sure that it certainly looked like Cleo. I wanted to be absolutely sure it was her, so I said, "What's your name?" And she didn't answer, and I said, "What's your name?" She didn't answer again, so I asked her a third time, and then she looked at me and she said, "My name's Cleo." And it was, and that was it. So, then we turned around and walked out of that house. And not long after that, got into the car, and the officer I was with, Detective Sergeant Hutchinson, who was the family liaison officer, called Cleo's parents and said, we've got someone here that wants to speak to you. And it was, you know, a wonderful feeling to be able to make that call. So,
what was their reaction?
Oh, you can imagine, just absolute surprise, and they were ecstatic. So things developed so quickly. You know, we didn't really have time to prepare them, and certainly didn't want to give them any false expectations about what might happen. We didn't know ourselves, so you know, it's always a delicate process, you know, when it comes to that. So, you know, still to be able to give them that news and then say, you know, please start making way to the hospital, we'll meet you there, was fantastic. And can I say, having seen her a couple of times this morning, she's a little energizer bunny, and she, you know, how she has that much energy, I wish I did. I'm about ready to go to sleep. But she was, yeah, so just a very, very sweet, energetic girl. Very, very trusting and very open with us. You know, we all wanted to take turns in holding her. So, yeah, it was yeah, a really good experience. Was she physically okay?
She's physically okay.
Yeah. And that was evident from the start. And, you know, taking to the hospital, I guess, was, you know, assurance of that from the people that know what they're doing.
We've spoken about Cleo's parents' reaction to hearing the news. But what was Cleo's reaction to seeing her parents for the first time?
Oh, yeah. Mummy! Big hugs, kisses, yeah, and lots of tears, you know. So, as you can expect, you know, it was...
Is this the best moment of your career?
Oh, without a doubt.
4-year-old Cleo Smith was found after midnight November 3rd, 2021. Police broke into a home and Cleo had been in one of the rooms. When Cleo was found, she was actually inside a dark, locked room playing with a toy car. Their house was weirdly full of dolls. Terence Kelly was apparently obsessed with dolls. Now, Chloe's hair had been cut and dyed, according to Dr. Xanthi Mallett, who was an associate of criminology at the University of Newcastle. She said, as we know, that it is extremely rare to find a child safe after such a long time missing, but also that this case didn't fit a pattern of the majority of child abduction cases, that 3/4 of child abductions are actually carried out by family members. But when a stranger strikes and takes a child, usually the perpetrator wants to dispose of the evidence. So never a great outcome for that child or their family. Now, Ellie gave an interview in the aftermath and said, as a parent, you want to make sure that they stay a child for as long as they can. But that her daughter had lost that. Because bear in mind, this child had been away from her parents, locked in a room for almost 3 weeks with a stranger. That must have been haunting for that child and so confusing. Ellie also said for the first week after Cleo was back at home, she was so scared that she had to sleep with all the lights on and all the doors in the house wide open. Even then, she would often wake in the middle of the night screaming from nightmares. And even months after, Cleo still told her parents that she had very many sad nights.
We had to make sure she felt safe and she felt comfortable. She was always a really independent little girl. Like, she would love sleeping by herself. She would love her own space, her own area. And now she's a lot more with us. Which is great. We don't mind.
Yeah.
We love a snuggle. She still has her sad nights, her nightmare nights, something she just can't explain.
Yeah. What are the sad nights about? What is she sad about?
She doesn't have the words to explain what she's sad about. She just knows that's how she feels. So they're just sad nights. Her nightmare nights are the worst nights.
Yeah.
Terence Darrell Kelly was born in Wickham, Western Australia, to Indigenous Aboriginal parents. When he was 2 years old, his parents abandoned him. They were really abusive alcoholics. They were drug addicts. Kelly was born with fetal alcohol syndrome disorder, and what this means is physical and developmental issues because a baby has been exposed to alcohol in the womb. Really, there isn't any safe drinking in pregnancy. Now, after his parents abandoned him, Kelly was placed into the custody of his maternal aunt, Penny Walker. Now, because of the fetal alcohol syndrome disorder, Kelly already had speech and hearing issues. And this aunt really wasn't any better of a parent for this child, because she would feed him alcohol in his baby bottles. I would imagine this was so he would sleep more and be less work for her. Now, even though Kelly had these hearing issues, he refused to wear hearing aids because there was this fear that the kids would bully him. And that makes sense. He looked different, he sounded different. Now, by the age of 12, Kelly attempted suicide, which leads him to be hospitalised. At this point, he is diagnosed with ADHD and oppositional defiant disorder. And due to a number of violent and disruptive behaviours, he was expelled from school. Now, prior to the abduction of Cleo, Terence Kelly served a prison sentence for burglary and aggravated burglary offences. He also received a fine for possession of methamphetamines. In 2017, Kelly was released from prison and he returned to live with his Aunt Penny until she died in 2020. Also living in the home with Kelly was Penny's grandson, Ashley James Brofo. Now, Brofo was a monster in his own right. In 2023, Brofo was convicted of the abduction and sexual assault of a 9-year-old girl in Perth. Brofo would be the perfect example of prison justice because March 9, 2023, he would actually be murdered by another inmate at Haki Prison. Terence Kelly had an unusual hobby for a grown man of collecting Bratz dolls. Now, I'm not judging anyone for their collections or hobbies. So in saying that, while it is unusual, that is no shade to any adult who collects dolls or anything that is consenting and law-abiding and not hurting anyone. That disclaimer out of the way. But Kelly had dozens of these dolls, some still preserved in the original packaging. Kelly was also active on social media. He would post pictures and videos of his collections. He is in some of these and he is posing with the dolls. But where this gets dangerous is Kelly starts to develop these fantasies of being the father to these dolls. He went on to create a Facebook page for his fictitious children, and he would have these conversations with them through Facebook. And to him, he believed they were real. At least that's what he would later tell police. Once he was arrested, Kelly underwent a medical assessment, and the psychiatrist involved described him as being severely fragile, disturbed and with a fragmented identity, that he was detached and antisocial, depressive and narcissistic. Kelly would also be described as having a severe personality disorder, antisocial personality disorder and schizophrenia, brain disease, complex PTSD, moderate depressive disorder and anxiety. That's a full bag of mental illnesses and health issues to manage. But what would also be discovered was that Terence Kelly had no connection with Cleo or her family. His neighbours would later describe him as being really quiet, a bit of an oddball in their words, but not someone they would ever suspect of being involved in anything like this. Kelly would only come to the attention of police the day before he was arrested, when Kelly had gone to the remote Blowholes campsite that night. He told police that he'd only gone there looking to steal some purses and money, anything of value. And he did leave with something that was the most valuable, a child, but that was never his intention going into this. Kelly told investigators that he had taken methamphetamine earlier that evening and was so fueled by that when he got to Ellie and Jake's tent with the girls also inside. He unzipped the tent sometime between 2:40 and 4:40 a.m., scooping a sleeping Cleo out of the tent in her sleeping bag, vanishing into the night. The reason Kelly told police he had actually taken Cleo was because he wanted a little girl to play with and dress up, like one of his dolls. He also said that he hadn't planned on keeping the girl, but it's unclear exactly what his plan was with her.
Her kidnapper, the doll-obsessed loner, Terence Kelly.
He had his fantasies and he was trying to make them come to life. It just happened to be that it was our tent that he got into.
Now, police found that for nearly 3 weeks, Cleo was held captive at Kelly's house. She was locked in a room with a mattress on the floor. He would turn on the radio really loud to drown out her cries for her mother. At one point, Cleo even heard her name on the radio and she began to cry for her parents. However, all this did was to have Kelly turn up the radio even louder.
Obviously, it hurts to know that she was crying out for help and we weren't there. It hurts to know that she was crying out for help and
she's ignored, yeah.
It was ignored.
Kelly left little Cleo in the home all alone for hours while he went to meetings, shopping, and visited with his relatives. During his interrogation, Kelly told police that he tried to restrain Cleo's hands, feet and mouth with duct tape. He'd also tried to tie her to a chair, but he told investigators his attempts failed because she was a fighter. She didn't make it easy for Kelly. Incredibly brave despite being such a small child. And Kelly told investigators he didn't force it because he didn't want to hurt her. Now, to add on to the craziness of the situation, on social media, while Cleo's mother Ellie was pleading for her daughter's safe return, Kelly befriended her on Facebook, which is bizarre that he wanted to be that close to the family emotionally while he has their four-year-old locked up in his house. We are just going to take a quick break now for a word from one of our sponsors. November 3rd, 2012. There is a crucial, horrible error in the case. Seven News names the wrong person as Cleo's alleged abductor. Now, they do retract and apologise for this the same day, but the man named an error here, Terry Flowers, who is also known by his mother's name, Kelly. So, Terry Kelly. He's at the hospital with his newborn baby, when his sister basically called him and told him that he was all over the news for abducting a four-year-old girl. Now, obviously, he went straight to the police station, something he should never have to do when his partner had just had a baby. He should be there with them and not having to deal with this, but he wanted to clear his name. He had such a severe panic attack at that point that he needed medical treatment. Quote, "They gave me drugs just to calm me down. It made my partner really upset. This was whilst trying to keep ourselves together to keep our baby strong." Unquote. Now, because of this huge declaration in the media, people were knocking on his door and his mother's door all day. He ended up even receiving death threats. Ultimately, Terry would sue Seven News for defamation, understandably. It would take until February 2022 for the case to be resolved with a settlement agreement outside of court.
Kelly admitted he was high on meth at the time, living in an idealised fantasy world to escape his traumatic past that included a tangled web of social media profiles for a family that didn't exist.
You know, he wanted a daughter, he wanted a wife.
November 3rd, 2021. This was when all of this finally went to court. This was when Kelly was charged with one count of forcibly taking a child under 16 and one count of assaulting a police officer. Kelly didn't apply for bail. Then 2 days later, November 5th, 2021, Terry Kelly was flown to Perth and transferred to Casuarina Prison, a maximum security prison. At this point, he appeared via video link. He pled guilty to one count of stealing a child, but didn't enter a plea on the charge of assaulting a police officer. Now, this assault charge was downgraded to obstructing police officers. And then on January 30th, 2023, Kelly pled guilty and was fined $1,000 for that. Sentencing occurred April 5th, 2023. Judge Julie Wager sentenced Kelly to 13 years and 6 months imprisonment with a non-parole period of 11 and a half years. Judge Wager said, quote, "The fear and distress caused to Cleo's parents over those 18 days was immeasurable. The child's life and that of her families have been permanently impacted, and that impact will never go away." Unquote. Now, obviously, there was a lot of public criticism due to the leniency of that sentence. Kelly could have received the maximum sentence of as long as 20 years. But the judge basically afforded Kelly leniency due to his early guilty plea and also his traumatic upbringing. Because no child should have to suffer the neurodevelopmental difficulties, the trauma, the grief and neglect Kelly suffered as a child. Quote, "Sadly, in Western Australia, many Aboriginal children have suffered the adverse impacts of colonialism. I fully accept you're one of them. And I accept that you've turned to drug misuse because of the pain and trauma that you've suffered throughout your life." Unquote. The judge also stated that while she accepted Kelly wanted a real child of his own, it was drugs, not delusion, that caused him to steal one. Quote, "But for the illicit drug use impacting on your complex personality and neurodevelopmental issues, you would have been far less likely to have ever stolen a child." Unquote. Now, after all was said and done, Western Australian Police Commissioner Colin Blanch made it clear he was against the judge's display of leniency in granting Kelly a 25% reduction on the sentence. He labelled the crime as heinous and every parent's worst nightmare. Quote, I would expect the community will never think that 13 and a half years is enough. I'm a police commissioner and I respect the way we do the rules of law. But as a father, that's something I could never forgive. Unquote.
It began as a massive wide spectrum of investigation and narrowed and narrowed and narrowed, and just prior to his arrest, they became more focused on him.
But the nightmare still isn't over. Just this week, Terence Kelly began challenging his sentence, his legal team lodging documents in the Court of Appeal, arguing proper weight wasn't given to his disadvantaged childhood.
Kelly's defence team appealed, and in September 2024, the Court of Appeal rejected a bid to reduce his sentence. His defence team argued Kelly's mental impairments and severe personality dysfunction was not duly considered. Kelly's defence team also argued the sentencing judge did not give enough consideration to his childhood trauma and disadvantage. The state prosecutor had opposed the sentence appeal. Psychologists have explained that Kelly is going to have a really tough time in prison. First of all, he's in a protected wing because of the nature of his crimes, and he's also got those neurodevelopmental issues. Now, Dr. Mallett, who was recently appointed the co-director of the Queensland Centre for Domestic and Family Violence Research, said Kelly lacks concerns for others and poses a higher risk of re-offending, which to me kind of means he shouldn't have gotten the reduced sentence, because he may not realise what he is doing is wrong due to his challenges, that he couldn't comprehend the impact of his actions. So, when it comes to his rehabilitation, people have to want to change and recognise the harm they've caused. Also, it's been said Kelly's offending was complex and it doesn't fit the typical offender profile. So this is obviously a very layered issue. Regardless, Terence Kelly will potentially be eligible for parole in 2033. The family have since moved away from their hometown of Carnarvon so that they don't have that constant reminder of what happened there. Today, Cleo Smith is 8 years old. She is happy and healthy and a loving big sister to Isla. She loves swimming and gymnastics. Cleo recently went overseas to compete in a gymnastics tournament. If you have your own thoughts and theories on the story we discussed today, or any stories we talk about here on Stolen Lives, please search Stolen Lives Podcast on Facebook. Like the page so you don't miss an episode. And join the Stolen Lives discussion group to talk about your thoughts and theories. You can also talk to us on Instagram, Stolen Lives Podcast. If you like what you heard today, we would appreciate it if you share this episode on your social media of choice. And subscribe and leave a positive review on your podcast app. Today's episode was researched and written by me, Ali. Hosting and production was also by me, Ali. Music is by Mayu.